Hello, this is Irene Bullard. I'll be reading the pantograph dated Tuesday, December the 4th, 2018. Let's begin on the front page. Students take a whack at Lizzie Borden case. Eureka College courses recreate infamous murder. Lizzie Borden may or may not have given her father and stepmother numerous whacks with an axe in the infamous 1892 murder in Fall River, Massachusetts. But William Lally, associate professor of criminal justice at Eureka College, thinks a sloppy investigation and lack of sophisticated testing procedures were the reason that she was acquitted by the jury. With today's technology, there's no doubt in my mind they'd be able to convict her, Lally said as he stood in a guest house on campus where the Borden murder scene was recreated in gruesome detail for the benefit of two courses at the college. The scene was recreated in three rooms of the former home of the college president through the efforts of the college's theater and prop departments and students in Associate Professor Marty Lynch's stage design class. On Sunday, students in Lally's crime scene class used 21st century forensic tools and procedures to investigate the infamous 19th century crime. Lally likes giving his students hands-on experiences. Cameron Lucas, a sophomore in criminal justice from Canton, said knowing their final class project was based on an actual unsolved crime makes it more interesting. It makes you actually want to figure out what happened. The team with which Lucas worked found something the original investigators overlooked. A dress with red stains hidden under a dresser in Lizzie Borden's room. According to accounts of the original case, investigators did not do a thorough search of her room the day of the murder, August the 4th, 1892, because she wasn't feeling well. The next day, Borden was seen attempting to tear up a dress, which she said she was planning to burn because it was covered in paint, according to accounts of the case. Lally's students had something that the 19th century investigators didn't have. A chemical called luminol that can be used to detect trace amounts of blood stains. As part of the class project, they used the luminol, also known as Blue Star Forensic Bloodstain Reagent, to field test the dress that after they took it into a darkened closet, the areas containing blood glowed light blue. The students also found a letter from a druggist in the drawer of a bedside table, turning down Borden's request to purchase a particular poison. That letter wasn't allowed at the trial, but Lally thinks that it should have been permitted as evidence of prior planning. The students found an axe with a broken handle, as did the original investigators. The blade had been wiped clean, then dust was added, apparently to make it look like it had been in place before the murders. If the original investigators had luminol available, it could have detected traces of blood even after the blade had been cleaned, said Lally. Students followed all the procedures they would at an actual crime scene, which is what the course is training them to do. They took pictures and measurements of the scene while also searching for and collecting evidence, carefully documenting each step. They dusted for fingerprints. Lally, a former police officer, told students, "When I was an investigator, I walked through the crime scene pretending I did the crime to figure out where important evidence might be found." You've got to change the way your brain thinks, he told them. You're not a civilian now. You've got to see the world in details. Junior Trey Ben of Bartonville said it was stressful to put together everything learned in class and to not miss anything. You learn about it in the classroom, but transferring it to the field is different, he said. Lynch said creating the scene also was a good experience for his theater students. They researched the crime, the house, and the specific details, he said. They looked at what the rooms were like. They had to adapt as they would in theater. Lally has used crime scene simulations before to give his Eureka College students hands-on experience. He has worked with high school students also. He even had the theater department build a plywood room that was set on fire in a parking lot, so students could work firsthand on an arson investigation. But this was the first time Lally used a real unsolved crime for the final class project. It probably won't be the last. There are a lot of unsolved murders, he said. Gas prices at lowest average of year. Ted Davis of Bloomington had a smile on his face. I'm really liking these prices quite a bit, he said, while filling his tank Monday morning at the Quick and Easy at 1606 Morrissey Drive in Bloomington. These are pretty good for a change. The price at the pump was $2.15 for a gallon of unleaded gasoline. In Bloomington Normal, the average price was $2.19 per gallon, the lowest average of the year so far, according to GasBuddy, a Boston-based company that operates apps and websites for the public to report and see prices of fuel across the country. The highest average of the year came May 25th, when the average in the Twin Cities was $2.97 per gallon. I was surprised to see it this low, said Charlotte Fullhart of Bloomington at the same station. I know there are probably a lot of economic reasons why this is. It's the economy, or it's the low unemployment rate, or the holiday season, or this or that. I don't care about any of those reasons. I'm just happy that the prices are this low. Prices at Illinois gas stations on Monday were 13.9 cents per gallon lower than a year ago, and are 44.1 cents per gallon lower than a month ago. Pat DeHaan, head of petroleum analysis for GasBuddy, said the national average stands at its lowest point in 2018, having fallen nearly 50 cents since the start of October. Across the country, the average price of unleaded gasoline was $2.43 a gallon on Monday afternoon. While OPEC will be meeting this week to discuss the possibility of cutting oil production in light of the $25 per barrel drop in prices since October, Americans will likely see falling prices at least for one more week. But after that, and before the Christmas rush, prices may climb again. The promise of a trade deal with China may boost confidence in the economy, he said, pushing global oil demand back up and driving prices higher. Jim Arundel of Haworth was buying gas at $2.16 per gallon at Casey's at 911 Morrissey Drive in Bloomington on Monday. It's more money in my pocket, and that's a good thing, he said. Nobody is complaining right now about gas prices, so I give the credit to President Trump, he said. Good things happen when people are working and the economy is rolling. Also at the station was Kristen Greenwell of Normal, who said she was pleased with the lower prices, too. There never is a bad time for lower gas prices, but when it is the holiday season, it is especially a good time, she said. I can't remember the last time it was this low. At the Circle K Marathon at 515 South Clinton Street in Bloomington, Tim Olson of Bloomington was putting gas in his truck, anxious to do so before the price rises again. You fill it up and fill it often when it gets anywhere close to $2 per gallon, he said. I've seen it climb half a dollar in a day, so you can never be too cautious when it gets this low. Gasoline prices in Illinois have fallen 12.2 cents per gallon in the past week, according to GasBuddy. Over the past five years, prices on December the 3rd have ranged widely, $2.39 per gallon in 2017, $2.23 per gallon in 2016, $1.97 per gallon in 2015, $2.80 per gallon in 2014, and $3.27 per gallon in 2013. Child testifies about alleged assault. A Bloomington man offered candy to a preteen girl to entice her from her bed to engage in sex with him. The child testified Monday in the suspect's sexual assault trial. The pattern of alleged rape began about 4 years ago when James Shields was in a relationship with the girl's mother and continued for several months according to the alleged victim, who is now a teenager. Shields, 31, is charged with predatory criminal sexual assault. The girl told jurors Shields woke her up with an offer of candy. When she went to the living room, Shields allegedly undressed her and forced her to engage in sex. The minor described a flashback that occurred in April during a disagreement with her father, in which she disclosed the alleged assaults. "I just told him," the child said of her disclosure, which included revealing Shields telling her to keep the alleged abuse a secret. The girl's father testified that she was very upset, crying and shaking, when she told him about Shields. In her opening remarks to the jury, Assistant State's Attorney Erica Reynolds said Shields was paid $1,000 a month from the state to babysit the alleged victim and her siblings while their mother worked. "Shields broke the cardinal rule of babysitting. He harmed one of those children," said Reynolds. Defense lawyer Jennifer Patton told the jury, "The case comes down to credibility." She asked jurors to listen closely to the alleged victim's testimony and compare that account to a videotaped interview of the child conducted after the child's disclosure in May at the McLean County Children's Advocacy Center. The interview is expected to be played in court today when the trial continues. Daily Digest. Food bank given 10K of pork. The Illinois Pork Producers Association, Illinois Corn Marketing Board, and the Illinois Soybean Association Checkoff Program presented Midwest Food Bank with 10,000 pounds of ground pork on November 30th. The gift is part of a larger donation from the Pork Power, Partnering to Fight Hunger in Illinois program. More than 50,000 pounds of ground pork were donated to 9 regional food banks in Illinois during November and December. The Illinois Pork Producers Association launched Pork Power in 2008 to help fight hunger in Illinois and to give farmers an avenue to donate pork to food banks. Since then, more than 625,000 pounds of pork have been donated. Road closures. Northbound Morris Avenue in Bloomington, between Oakland Avenue and Jackson Street, is closed to traffic effective immediately for street repairs. Also, westbound Front Street between Prairie and East Streets is closed to traffic effective immediately for street repairs. Both closures are in effect until further notice. Today's Flick Fact. Question: Illinois State University's toughest basketball opponent on the men's court has not been Wichita State or Bradley or SIU or Loyola. Do you know the school that ISU has had the most problems defeating? And the answer, it would be its crosstown rival just a few blocks to the south, namely Illinois Wesleyan. The Titans have won 68 of the school's 110 meetings. Today in history. Today is Tuesday, December the 4th, the 338th day of 2014. There are 27 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On December the 4th, 1783, General George Washington bade farewell to his Continental Army officers at France's Tavern in New York. On this date in 1875, William Marcy Tweed, the boss of New York City's Tammany Hall political organization, escaped from jail and fled the country. Thought for today. A person reveals his character by nothing so clearly as the joke that he resents. Written by George Christoph Lichtenberg, a German scientist, 1742-1799. On this page there is a large photograph, and the headline is "Volunteers Unload Items for Crisis Nursery." Underneath the photograph, Paul Davis Restoration Employees from left to right. Brad Kidwell, Harold Streeter, Linda Hagerbaumer, and Daniel Collins formed a human chain on Monday as they passed children's items from a Connect Transit bus that was filled with donations to the Children's Home and AIDS Crisis Nursery in Bloomington. The items collected in the 16th annual Stuff the Bus Drive will stock the crisis nursery with enough supplies to last almost a year. And the article says, to Jamie Russell, among nearly 50 volunteers who unloaded a Connect Transit bus outside Children's Home and Aid on Monday, the bus wasn't just stuffed with diapers, baby wipes, infant formula, stuffed animals, and clothes. It was filled with hope. I was just thinking of all the families who struggle day to day to have even 1/100th of what we have on this bus, Russell said as she handed children's items to other volunteers. I think of the numbers of people this will impact in the community. The volunteers formed an assembly line that ended in Children's Home and Aid Crisis Nursery, 403 South State Street, where donations will be used by children through age 6 who are admitted to the crisis nursery during the next year. The crisis nursery provides a safe, temporary environment for children who are at risk for abuse or neglect because of domestic violence, homelessness, mental illness, or other crises. The supplies were donated last week by shoppers as the foot-long bus was parked outside Walmart in Normal in Bloomington and Kroger in Normal. The event was the 16th annual Stuff the Bus, a partnership of the Children's Home and Aid, Connect Transit, Amalgamated Transit Union Local 752, Paul Davis Restoration, Great Plains Media, and Deers Mill Farm. I enjoy kids and they deserve things that sometimes their parents can't give them, said Connect Transit driver and ATU Local 752 member Christy Gordon, who has volunteered at Stuff the Bus every year. While the numbers of items donated won't be known until counting is complete in several days, volunteers who unloaded and sorted the donations agreed that donations were at least equal to last year. Last year, 4,778 items were donated, a decrease from the 6,362 items donated in 2016. I'd say it's at least what we did last year, said Connect Transit marketing manager Jeff Holtke. Considering we started the week with snow and ended it with tornadoes, it turned out to be a pretty good week. Jeannie Higdon, Children's Home and Aid Family Support Clinical Supervisor, reported that cash, checks, sponsorships, and gift cards totaled $6,026.21, compared with $4,469 last year. I continue to be humbled by the level of support the community is showing for our programs and our families, Higdon said. This is one of my favorite days of the year, seeing all the stuff, getting a little workout in the morning, and getting the community together, Russell said, as she and fellow volunteers Holtke and Brendan O'Neill of Connect Transit and Sylvia Aguilar of Children's Home and Aid squatted and lifted and carried merchandise as they unstuffed the bus. Leah Risto, Stephanie Newman, and Jamie Caraballo, all with Children's Home and Aid, sang Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer at one point as they worked. But everyone knew the effort had a serious purpose. During the fiscal year that ended June the 30th, the crisis nursery had 2,287 admissions for 225 children, while providing 111 post-crisis home visits and 143 parent support group meetings, said Tiffany Powell, the agency's Family Support Services Program Manager. So many people in this community want to help, Powell said. County Board changes meeting time. Full meetings to begin at 5:30 p.m., new members sworn in. Some new McLean County Board members delivered on a key campaign promise within minutes of taking office Monday morning. After a push to change when the board meets failed in 2016, the candidates in last month's election took up the cause, and those efforts combined to move full board meetings from 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. starting next month. The board will still meet on the third Tuesday of each month, and committee meetings will continue to be held throughout the workday. Full board meetings, but not committees, are streamed on the county's Facebook page. Really, it's about giving people access to be able to see firsthand their elected officials at work, said board member Josh Barnett, who stumped for a change previously. I'm very excited. Chairman John McIntyre, who proposed the change in the board's new rules, disputed that the previous time was a white old man thing, as was said, meaning it was convenient for retirees on the board, and said that he doesn't believe this had anything to do with transparency, as supporters claimed. However, there is the availability of people running for this board, and if people are working in the time it might require them to serve, he said, I think this will make it much simpler for especially our younger, newer board members who have to work to get here, said board member Lori Woolrab. Board member Chuck Erickson noted, however, that residents should still plan to address committees where most of the board's work is done before taking a problem to a meeting of the full board. It's very important for our public to understand that we are not a council that meets and conducts business as such, said McIntyre. We want the public to come to our committees and have firsthand experience with our seven people on each committee. The board delayed a proposed change to post audio recordings of committee meetings on the county's website. County staff sought to post recordings in lieu of detailed transcripts to satisfy transparency requirements under state law, but board members objected to cutting the transcripts. The board's rules subcommittee is expected to make a recommendation to the full board by its March meeting. Audio recordings of full board meetings already are posted to the site. The discussion over the meeting times followed the swearing-in of officials elected November the 6th, including six new board members: District 1 Republican Gerald Thompson, District 4 Democrat Logan Smith, District 5 Democrat Elizabeth Johnston, District 7 Democrat Sharon Chung, District 8 Democrat Shayna Wachinski, and District 9 Republican Lindsay Bloomfield. I never tire of these ceremonies whatsoever. They serve not only as a reminder of the passage of time, but also as a breath of enthusiasm, fresh faces, new ideas, said 11th Circuit Chief Judge Mark Fellheimer, who swore in the officials except Wachinski, who was sworn in by friend and State Senator Daniel Biss, an Evanston Democrat who became a notary for the occasion. County CHS program suspends new clients. McLean County's mental health agency, which serves people with the greatest needs and the fewest resources, has suspended accepting new clients into its psychiatric program because of declining support from the state and United Way of McLean County. We are not going to be accepting new referrals into the psychiatric program. Effective immediately until further notice, Tom Barr, Executive Director of the Center for Human Services, CHS, told the Pantograph on Monday. The psychiatric program, which serves people age 12 and older with severe and persistent mental illness, prescribes medicine to low-income clients and works with them to access the medicine because the vast majority don't have insurance or are on Medicaid, or their deductibles are so high that they cannot afford the medicine, Barr said. Barr said Monday's decision does not impact CHS's other programs. We continue to accept referrals in counseling, school outreach, recovery, case management, and crisis programs. The psychiatric program's 752 clients will continue to receive services, Barr said. As some people we serve become more stabilized, we hope to refer them to other providers, he said. Unless new sources of funding are found, we will continue to bring that number of clients down. Barr said, we don't have a specific number or goal. In the fiscal year that ended June the 30th, the psychiatric program served 997 clients, Barr said. All CHS programs combined served more than 3,300 people in the last fiscal year. It's heartbreaking for the governing board, the staff, and myself to take this action, he said. A CHS nurse recently resigned to take a position elsewhere and will not be replaced, said Barr, who has no plans for further cuts. In 2015, Illinois Department of Human Services cut funding for psychiatric programs for community mental health agencies, which meant a $353,000 cut to the CHS psychiatric program. That state funding was never restored, Barr said. We limited our number of new referrals by prioritizing people with the greatest needs and fewest resources, he said. In the fiscal year that ended June 30, 2015, the program served 1,326 people. Since then, decreased community financial support for the United Way of McLean County meant that funding for the psychiatric program declined from $170,000 in the fiscal year that ended June 30th of 2016 to $69,800 in the current fiscal year, Barr said. United Way recently announced that it will focus its funding for 2019 on programs that affect youth and families. Barr is anticipating no United Way funding for the fiscal year that begins July 1st. We appreciate the transparency of United Way, but that is the tipping point for us, Barr said. CHS has spent $1.4 million of its reserves to keep the program going, with $3.6 million remaining. We will continue to use our reserves to support the psychiatric program, but we just can't do it at the rate we've been doing, Barr said. Barr said CHS is looking to obtain funding from other local, state, federal, and private sources. United Way President David Taylor said, "We appreciate all the work that Tom and his staff and CHS do. But CHS and United Way actions are indicative of what a lot of nonprofits are having to do, prioritizing what we can and can't do. The decision that CHS is announcing underscores how important it is to consider local organizations like United Way for funding," Taylor said. Normal hears grant suggestions. As local governments try to increase public input for community development block grant spending, two Normal residents stepped up to the plate Monday. Before the Normal City Council approved a new community participation plan for the subfederal grants intended to develop viable urban communities, public commenters John Walter and Ron Ulmer shared their ideas for the funding. "Maybe use some of this money to address the need for additional recreational courts in North Normal," said Walter, a North Normal resident who said the area lost a basketball court when Fairview Family Aquatic Center was built. "There have been some problems in that area that we would like to see solved by providing more recreational opportunities." Ulmer suggested the town use some of the grant money to turn vacant buildings into affordable housing or expand library access through satellite branches rather than pursuing a new library or expansion. "The federal grant money is intended to provide decent housing and a suitable living environment and expand economic opportunities, principally for low and moderate income families and households." The town receives and spends $400,000 through the program annually. The community participation plan is a step toward developing a five-year plan for how the money will be used. Associate Town Planner Taylor Long said that will be the subject of public hearings, focus group, and surveys in 2019. "I commend the staff and others that have been involved to elicit more public input," said Council Member Jeff Fritzen. "This is one area where I think over the years there have been times when there were some uncertainties about how do we best put this money to work. It's good to be accessible and let the general public have a say." I will finish this article in the second half hour. We'll take a short break. Please stay tuned.